Welcome to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Robert Bound. Today, the Telegraph's arts and entertainment writer Alice Vincent joins me in the studio to talk TV. We'll don our best armour for the new series of fantasy thriller, Game of Thrones, saunter into the office for the final season of Mad Men, and then we're heading to Ohio for Louis Theroux's latest adventure, this time into the state's psychiatric hospitals, no less. That's all coming up here on the Arts Review on Monocle 24. Welcome, Alice, to the Arts Review. We're going to the final series of Mad Men.
Quite.
What on earth can we... I mean, did the last series end on a hangover?
That was actually a Freudian sense.
I meant a cliffhanger, but of course the cliffhanger is a hangover in Mad Men circles. Yeah. Where did it end? Where do we think it will start in series seven?
Well, the sneaky thing is that season seven was actually... They did a Breaking Bad and they split it in half. So we're kind of in the second half of season seven.
Right.
But really, in a way, this is the culmination of like 5 years and seven years worth of work. The whole point of Mad Men, one of its biggest criticisms, is that there aren't big plot lines, there aren't big storylines. People just rumble on and people have been speculating about how it's all going to end for years. To add to complications, Matthew Vina, who is the creator, and his team are famously tight-lipped, although they have given some clues away.
I like that's a little bit of journalese that you've added to the Arts Review.
Oh, really?
Famously tight-lipped Wiener.
Oh, you can tell I write more than talk most of the time. I'm sorry.
No, but that's and is that frustrating for you writing about this show and for the legions of fans? Obviously, you have to translate your passion. But I mean, are they tough to interview? Are the press releases as famously tight-lipped?
There are no press releases.
Really?
No.
So they don't invite you to anything. They don't say, "What do you think about this? What do you think might happen?"
Not at all. No, they famously, release the images for every new season. And there's always about six of them, and everyone gets very excited. But that's about it. But the one clue that is there is that because it's chronological, in the past I've tried to predict it by events that happened in 1969, for example,
and
seeing how many of them come true. And for example, like, we did end on the moon landing at the end of the last season, and that was a massive issue in there and one that tied in thematically to those characters. One thing we do know that's going to happen is that I think each of the episodes is going to be dedicated to one of the main characters. Okay. So you'll have a whole episode on Betty, a whole episode on Don, and that will be a kind of cheerio.
So each character gets their sort of denouement and their strings are tied up and they're patted on the bottom and kind of walked...
Quite
out of the studio lot.
Yeah, and I'm not gonna have any spoilers for the last season because if you've not seen it, then you should just sit down and lose a week to watching it. But that happened at the end of the kind of first half with one of the major characters, and that was just an incredible. Well, they're all incredible episodes, but it was done really well. So I am quite looking forward to that. Though I think we're all going to be in tears.
Do you think with a show like Mad Men, as you said, it's not a huge, it doesn't have this kind of roller coaster, stormy sea of plot lines. Do you think that that's sort of to its strength? That, you know, if they wanted to come back and have an eighth series, they could, because they haven't necessarily killed everybody off, or that nothing awful has sort of necessarily befallen people. Is that part of its? Does that kind of keep people going? That it's got a bit more of a novelistic approach to it.
Absolutely. Well, I think, I mean, you bring up Mad Men around a room full of people who watch sort of that kind of TV, and you'll have half be like, "Oh, I gave up at third season," and you'll have others who are completely encyclopedic about it. There's nowhere in between, and it is a show that requires your commitment for sure. So I think it just depends on whether you like that thing or not, and if you can be bothered to stick with it, because there are some episodes when you look back at it and you're like, "Well, nothing happened," but that's because you're there appreciating the acting or the dialogue. I mean, one of my favourite Mad Men facts is that Matthew Vina, types his script or whatever, and then he dictates it to some poor, like, typist who has to write it all down.
So he's kind of getting into his character as a sort of in a slightly sexist 60s office.
Yeah, well, because I mean, I don't know what gender of the typist is, but it's that kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly.
But he has to insist that the script can be said aloud. So that's why it's so good.
That's good. That works.
You know,
Matthew Vina is the Barbara Cartland.
Yes.
Or the AA
he's there
girl
on a poof.
Of the, exactly, just exactly.
With several cats.
Exactly. That's the way to do it. How many tears will you be shedding personally at the end of Game of Thrones? Mad Men?
I'm not a big crier, but I think it does tug at the heartstrings. I think there's going to have to be a box of man-sized Kleenex tissues nearby.
Okay. That is the sad demise of the Mad Men. We're going next to Game of Thrones. It says in the script, we're going ever so gracefully from scandalous office drama to the fantastical world of Game of Thrones. I think Game of Thrones is fairly scandalous.
Oh, massively. Far more than Mad Men, maybe. Different.
So tell us what's happening now. We're going into season 5. Yeah. What happened at the end of seasons 4? I've been asked to ask you, what do you think about where all the wolves have gone by the photo desk upstairs, who are Game of Thrones GOT devotees?
Right. Okay. Yeah. Do you watch it, Robert? Okay, well, that's fine. I don't know how many spoilers to give away in this.
Well, you can work on me because I'll just go, oh, really?
Okay, but it is, the wolves question was one that I asked myself in around season 2 to 3. And we do see one meet an unpleasant demise and another one goes beyond the wall.
I'm going to take that intelligence upstairs at the end of this
there
program.
There you go. Yeah. But it's true because there was this adorable litter of puppies in the first episode. We're 5 seasons on, don't really know where they've gone. And of all the bloody murders in Game of Thrones, maybe it's the puppies that the ones they just can't show on
that's
the screen.
That presumably is the only thing that you can't, right? Is that, you can't shoot the dog, right?
No, exactly.
So what are we looking forward to? Which are the plot lines that you think might be, if not resolved, might be pepped up a bit in this next series?
Okay, so Arya Stark, she's played by Maisie Williams and she's always been the kind of the tomboy. And she's one of the last remaining Starks now. And basically, I've always signalled her out for the person who will finally sit on the Iron Throne. So she's crossed the Narrow Sea, and I want to see what she does next.
Okay. What about, you said there are very few Starks left.
Mm.
This is a Game of Thrones, a game of families, a game of favour and war and all the rest of it. Mm. Who are the family? Who is the surname that might lay claim to it in this series, you think?
Ooh, well, it could be the Targaryens. There's only one of them left as well, but she's also a woman. I think this is a season for feminism.
Do you think there is? And what about Game of Thrones? Because one of the other things, one of the other criticisms is obviously there's so much violence against women, sexual violence against women. Mm. And it's sort of sexy, it's violent, but there's also sexual violence. Where do you stand on that? How can you stand on that? Because it's a kind of tough one, isn't it?
It is a tough one. And there are some scenes when there are a lot of prostitutes who meet very sticky ends. But then actually, I think basically if you're anyone in Game of Thrones, I was just going to put a massive name drop in there, but I'm not going to.
What? How on earth could you have dropped a name into that sentence?
I was just going to say, well, I was speaking to Kit Harington about this, actually.
Well, there we are. That's what we need.
And he said that the characters in Game of Thrones, violence is a way of life, which I think sums it up. It doesn't matter how rich or poor you are, you're likely to meet a sticky end. The violence towards women, it's not the violence so much that gets me because everyone, that's a universal thing. It's more the so much naked.
Yeah.
And everyone is improbably good looking and very, very slim. And that's a bit weird. And also, the funniest thing is that, we're set in Middle Earth, but there must have been, waxing parlours somewhere, because there's
Does this show not address that? Well, we can talk about that off mic while we play a clip.
Yeah.
This is a clip from season 5 of the none more hotly anticipated Game of Thrones.
Stannis Baratheon has an army at Castle Black. He means to take the north.
This is the time, and I will risk everything. Winter is coming. We know what's coming with it.
We can learn to live with the wildlings. We can add them to the army of the dead.
You are the few. We are the many.
We serve the gods, and the gods demand justice.
Oh, and a bit of Jonathan Pryce right at the end.
Yes, he's coming as well. That's
he's
exciting.
He's in it. He's in there.
Not just winter.
So there we have it. That was a phenomenally loud clip, wasn't it? That blew our socks off here in Studio One. Something else that was interesting was that apparently the TV shows have overtaken the books.
Mm.
So George Martin who obviously, other than being the fifth Beatle, is amazing, amazingly talented guy, brought out of retirement to write the biggest hit TV show. So George Martin's overtaken, his show's overtaken his books now. Could you see that? Or will that maybe happen in season five, that suddenly he's having to kill more people, or there's having to be more sort of less subtle plot
arcs? It's interesting you say.
Because of the medium.
Yeah, just a few days ago, actually, he revealed that he won't be writing the script for the sixth season. So up to this point, he's always been involved in the scripts, which is why they've been, arguably, people have been like, that's why they're so good, because he's involved. But because he's beavering away on the new books, he's like, no, I need to do the books. Which means that for season six, the writers could be left to their own devices, and then who knows what's going to happen.
Basically. So I presume he's an exec producer, so he'll have an overseeing role on it. But it's one of those funny things. As I wonder also, just generally on the point of writing for TV, whether you think once a show has been created by somebody and the first episode or season or whatever has been written by them, how easy it is to ape the voice of someone.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Because I guess, you know, Simpsons, Friends, these things that ran for so many series and still do in certain cases, it's clearly not the same personnel that started off in that writer's room.
Right, exactly.
I guess it's getting into the spirit of it. I wonder whether that's
having enough writers, I think, as well, that you come up with your own style. But I think it's also, with something like Game of Thrones, it's the same as Harry Potter or any other fantasy series. It's that there is a whole world there. So you've got to be careful, because Game of Thrones proper fans, the ones who have read the books, you know, are encyclopedic about these things. And it's that level of fact-checking which they're just not going to be able to recreate.
Yeah, I suppose it is. And everybody, it's one of those things, presumably, that everybody feels they own a stake of it.
Of course.
And you can't get anything wrong, because you can alienate an entire legion of fans by getting, you know, that would never have happened in the books.
Right.
Okay, that is Game of Thrones. That is kicking off. Season five kicks off, well, in next week, it seems.
Yes.
And here in the UK.
Yes, it is, yeah.
Okay. Next, we're going to talk about the documentary maker Louis Theroux. His By Reason of Insanity is coming to BBC Two. In fact, I think we're halfway through it.
So it finished on Sunday, but he's got another one coming.
Okay.
You can still watch it.
Louis built a career out of dabbling in the world of the weird and the controversial. His past documentaries have followed the likes of porn stars, paedophiles, and even dangerous pets. His latest venture, By Reason of Insanity, takes him to Ohio's psychiatric hospitals, where he's investigating how to reintegrate a patient back into society when they've committed a serious crime. I hope that didn't sound like I was reading off a script.
No, you're just incredibly lucid.
I'm just really lucid when it comes to... Let's have a clip from Louis' latest venture in Ohio.
Most of the men and women I'd be meeting have committed serious crimes, but been found NGRI, not guilty by reason of insanity, and detained not for punishment, but for treatment.
Do you feel guilt over what happened?
No, because I wasn't in my right mind. It wasn't my actions of wanting to do that. It was my illness.
This week I'd be talking to patients attempting to come to terms with their crimes.
I was so powerful, I thought I was psychic and that I could communicate with anybody I wanted to with my mind.
The clinicians entrusted with helping to make them safe.
Do you ever do what the voices tell you to do?
Yeah. If it's clearly a bad idea, I won't listen to them.
Louis Theroux getting into pretty heavy territory there, Alice Vincent. How is he standing up? Because Louis, he's an amusing man. He's got this. He's ever of the arched eyebrow and the wry voiceover. Does it work with such a serious topic as this?
Yeah, I mean, crikey, he's just brilliant. And I think this is the thing. And even right now in my head, I have the rap that he made up for one of the rap episodes he did like back in the 90s.
Yeah, right.
Just going round and round. It's so comical, and I'm trying quite hard not to laugh. But yes, I mean. You know, I think he always possibly wanted to do more serious stuff, and the BBC have finally let him go and do it.
Right.
And even when he was doing the silly things, he was a brilliant interviewer. And so there are elements of this that are just quite incredible. He's speaking to one patient who murdered his father in a fit of kind of psychotic rage. And he says to him, he's like, so did you love your father? And it emerges, it's a very powerful scene, but it emerges that of all of the treatment of all of these 15 years that this patient has been in the hospital, no one asked him that question. Louis Theroux was the first person to ask him that question.
Wow.
And that's what these programs bring. You know, they bring a fresh pair of eyes that would never have been in that situation before.
And I wonder, how easy do you think it is to, I mean, these programs obviously take a long time to set up, and getting permissions and getting people to sign things and getting it okayed by the state, by the federal government and all these sorts of things. Do you think do you always wonder what the patients feel they're getting out of it, or what the you know, what the hospital itself is getting out of it as well.
Yeah, I mean, not so much that. I am always kind of, from a sort of professional point of view, amazed that they managed to get it.
Yeah, because there are so many positions, permissions to, and hurdles to jump over.
Yeah, of course. But I do think, actually, I mean, when the one thing with Louis Theroux that people have always said is that, oh, well, you know, you have a very exploitative way of interviewing. You're very snide, as you say, the kind of raised, supercilious eyebrow kind of thing. And actually, I think he is gaining increasing responsibility, and it never feels exploitative. And the thing which was really, really good about these two films were that it never felt like a freak show. Like, sometimes you watch these documentaries about people who are in sort of very bizarre situations, very sad situations, and it feels a bit exploitative. This never did.
I've always enjoyed Louis Theroux's work, but you know what I mean? Maybe you do start off going on Louis Theroux's weird weekends, and you end up with him in a psychiatric hospital, and that's a nice story arc for himself, I'm sure, as well. I always think of him as quite similar to John Ronson, a journalist whose popularity makes some of it seem perhaps glib, but actually, if you read words on the page, if you actually watch the interviews that they do, they're very exceptionally skillful guys doing at the top of their game, I suppose. Nice. Well, that is By Reason of Insanity. It's new from Louis Theroux, and that's going to be on BBC Two here in the UK and on the iPlayer, etc., etc., etc. And that brings us to the end of today's Arts Review with Alice Vincent from The Telegraph. My producer for the show was Holly Fisher. The show was researched by Fernando Augusto Pacheco. Join us again at the same time tomorrow when we'll be joined by our book reviewer, Fleur MacDonald. But for the time being, from me and Vincent, as she was simply known at school, thanks for tuning in.